This Wednesday night, the U.S. Navy will try to shoot down a disabled spy satellite that's currently tumbling out of control and heading for Earth. The satellite is the size of a bus and contains toxic fuel that could make a big mess when it crashes. So how will it go down? Denton Abel is a geologist and meteorite expert with the American Museum of Natural History here in New York City, and he is here to explain it all. Hi, Denton.
It'll go down heavy. And it'll go down lighter, actually, if we blow it up, because it'll be on small pieces.
But, okay, well, let's start with this. The Pentagon says that there was a malfunction, right?
Yeah, really close. It was launched about in 06, so it was in late. So it was really right after it launched, lost control, lost track, lost communication.
And we say it's the size of a bus. Do you know how heavy it is?
It's about 6 ton. No.
Actually, I have that here.
You have it.
It's 5,000 pounds. Okay. And it's got this full tank of fuel.
Right. But the thing is we're not sure, scientists aren't sure, whether or not this would actually, the fact that it's full of this stuff, when it comes in and gets really hot, it might explode. Can't you take that risk? We don't know.
What would happen if it explodes in our atmosphere?
Then it will essentially not hurt anybody if it happens over uninhabited area, or it happens in over the ocean.
Okay, what happens if it hits land and explodes?
Well, that would be an impact explosion, and that would be that would not be good.
In what way?
Well, if it hits somebody's house, it would be like, you ever hear of these gas explosions where houses explode because they get filled with natural gas?
Yeah.
That might happen, but I think that wouldn't happen. It would explode in midair when it got hot. It would burn, essentially.
So will you explain that reentry process? What happens when this thing starts to enter the outer atmosphere?
When things enter the atmosphere from space, they're going really fast, the speeds that things go in space. This thing goes around the Earth many times it goes around several times per day.
Okay.
So, and for example, meteorites that hit the Earth can be going Mach 15, Mach 20, much higher, 15 kilometers per second. Divide by 1.6.
The only time I ever hear Mach is in those men's razor ads, like Gillette,
yeah.
Mach, whatever. Okay.
You're supposed to shave at the speed of sound.
I didn't know that.
Yes.
So this satellite is going, you said Mach 15?
A meteorite comes in that fast from the asteroid belt. This would not be going that fast. But it's going at orbital speed. So when it comes in, it has to decelerate. It took us a long time back in the Apollo era to figure out how to do that, get our astronauts back safely with heat shields and everything else. This thing is not coming in with heat shield. It is decelerating by friction with the atmosphere. So it gets very hot on the outside, and things that can melt. Things that can burn will burn. And things that can be scraped off by the air itself, that'll happen. So a comparison would be the Columbia accident, where debris was spread out for a long, long area, and some of it was unrecognizable. Some of it was.
Now, I understand we don't want this to land on anyone's head or house. I get that. But shooting it down doesn't seem that easy. So why can't we predict where it's going to land and tell people to stay out of the way?
The problem is when it goes near the top of the atmosphere, it has friction with the atmosphere, and it'll start to tumble. You throw a frisbee, it's not tumbling. But if you throw a football, if it tumbles, it becomes very hard to predict how it's going to hit the ground and react. Well, when things hit the atmosphere, it's like hitting something harder than because they're going really fast. And it'll react with the atmosphere in ways that are not predictable, interact.
I want to bring in another guest here. This is someone who looks at the military side of this. John Pike is the director of globalsecurity.org and an expert on space and defense policy. Hi, John.
Hi, glad to be here.
Thank you. Now, I know there have been other satellites to malfunction and crash into the atmosphere, even some that were bigger than this one. So why are we shooting this guy down?
Well, the reason the Pentagon acknowledges is the one that's been discussed, this hydrazine fuel tank, the potential hazard that it could pose to people and livestock on the ground. The one they're not talking about is, I think, the main reason, namely that a significant fraction of this spacecraft could survive reentry, and if it landed on the land, it could be recovered. And this could release some of our most sensitive reconnaissance technology to the Russians and the Chinese. Normally, when a reconnaissance satellite reaches the end of its life, they'll do a commanded reentry, so that it comes down over the Pacific Ocean where the Chinese or Russians can't pick it up. They'd never established contact with this spacecraft after it was launched, and so reducing the spacecraft to basically a rubble pile would basically mean that the reentry is going to be all over the place. It'll be little bits and pieces, and the Chinese or the Russians won't be able to pick them up, won't be able to make sense of them.
Well, John, Russia and China have both expressed skepticism about, you know, our motive, saying that this is really just a veiled weapons test. Do you think they might be right?
No, I think that's silly. This would be the Wednesday evening shot would be the 13th time that this interceptor had been fired against a target. The previous 12 tests were all fired against real targets, missile targets, and 11 of those 12 tests were successful. This Aegis interceptor would not be a practical anti-satellite weapon because normally you're not going to find a satellite at such a low altitude. So I think that the Chinese and Russian complaints were made by people at the foreign ministry who didn't know what they were talking about.
Do you think we're trying to... sorry, Denton, go ahead.
Oh, yeah, he's exactly right. The when the Chinese tested such a missile last year, it was at, or in January, I guess, it was at 600 kilometers, I think.
Yes,
and this is at 150
miles.
Kilometers, so
right.
it's a completely not the same situation.
Yeah, the debris that resulted from the Chinese test is going to be up there for years. The debris that would result from this American intercept would be up for a few hours, no more than a few days.
Now, do you know who gets to push the button to fire the missile? Is it President Bush? Who gets to do it?
Well, actually, it's going to be the software on the Ticonderoga-class cruiser that's firing the interceptor. They'll have the coordinates of the target. They'll know what sort of trajectory they want it to fly on. And so the computer is the thing that would actually send the signal to the interceptor to launch.
Now, if we miss, we get another try, right? How many shots do we get?
They get two more tries. They have a total of three of these interceptors that are on the Lake Erie cruiser out about 1,000 kilometers west of the Hawaiian Islands, and they can move the ship up and down to make sure that it's directly under the spacecraft when it comes back around for another try.
Now, Denton, we're using a similar technology here as we use for our missile defense system. And I wonder, how likely do you think this is to work? And more broadly, how likely is our missile defense system?
Well, this is a well-known target. We know roughly where it is. I think John spoke well to it. We know how to do this. We've tested these things before. Our statistics are pretty good.
You guys, will we be able to watch this happen on TV? I think people would love to see this happen.
Well, I think if Navy Public Affairs is earning its paycheck, we will be, because this would be very good publicity for them. Whether they've rigged it up is a different question. But they ought to have it live. They ought to have, you know, people there on the bridge talking it through. They get all kinds of publicity.
It really if it works, right, John? If it doesn't work, then...
It doesn't work, they'll come back around and do it again, and that'll make the suspense on the second test all the more exciting.
Gentlemen, thank you very much for joining us and explaining this.
Thank you.
Denton Abel is a geologist and meteor expert with the American Museum of Natural History in New York City. John Pike is a space and defense policy expert with globalsecurity.org. For more about them, visit our website, morefairgame.org.